Good evening. Well. My name's Dave Lawrence. And some of you I know and some of you I don't, and that's okay. And some of you, one of you, we had the incredible privilege of spending a lot of the summer with, and well, that's my wife and daughter. We also spent time with Dave this summer too, but we tried to forget that. No, we enjoyed spending time working this summer with Mr. Duffy, and I was surprised when he asked me if I would speak at this conference. And I've been, quite honestly, I've been very, very nervous about this weekend. I don't really know why, but I have been. I don't know if I still am or not. We went to Pizza Hut for supper, and it wasn't a big mistake. It was really, really good. But I'm so full of pizza. We ordered two large pizzas and two large breadsticks, and I'm so full of pizza. Oh, my. It's just sitting kind of right here. And then they have a really great setup there to divide between the smoking and non-smoking sections. And it's like just air between the two. And I really, really react to smoke. So I can hardly breathe, and I smell like smoke. And I thought, oh, this is a great thing. I'm going to youth conference. I'm going to smell it. People are going to think, did he have one last smoke out in the yard before he come in or what? anyhow, that's what we've been up to. And anyhow, I guess is that enough of an introduction? So we can get down to business now. You're going to notice something right off the bat, and I'm not apologizing for this. I'm just clarifying. I use a Bible, and it happens to say King James on it. So I'm going to use a few different phrases than what you are maybe used to. And when you look around, you're going to see a particular phrase that I'm going to use the King James version of. And the phrase that I'm going to be using all weekend is, we would see Jesus. Same idea as we wish to see Jesus. Same idea, just a little bit different wording. So that's the way it's going to happen, okay? I was born with the King James in my hand, and I'll die with one in my hand, but that's fine. Anyhow, the phrase that we're going to be using over and over again through the weekend, it's found in John chapter 12, verse 21. In verse 20, John 12, 20, there were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast. The same came therefore to Philip, which was of Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, Sir, we would see Jesus. What a noble desire that these people had. Their desire was to see Jesus. I don't know what they wanted. I have no idea what they wanted to see Jesus for. They may just have wished to see this man that they had heard about. They may have had, as many other people, a need, a really pressing need in their life, some physical need, where maybe somebody was sick and they wanted to see Jesus so that they could have this person healed. Maybe, and wouldn't it be beautiful if their desire was just to see Jesus? They wanted to meet this man. They wanted to see him. They said, Sir, talking to Philip, we wish to see Jesus. And it's my prayer that this evening and through this weekend, that each one of us will be challenged afresh in our desire to see Jesus. I'm going to use scriptures, but not in a lot of detail, because I'm going to start in Genesis this evening, and we're going to end up ultimately in the book of Revelation. We can't do Genesis to Revelation on a 6-message kind of a weekend, can we? Not unless we went a lot longer than the couple hours that Dave was talking about. So we're going to just hit a few highlights along the way, a few things that I find interesting when I think about the scriptures and when I look into the scriptures and really start to think about seeing Jesus in the scriptures and seeing Jesus in the places that the scriptures point to. First place that I would like to look for Jesus is in creation. Romans chapter 1 verse 20 tells us the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen. The invisible things of God, the invisible things of Jesus are clearly seen in creation. I'd like to read a story, first of all, about creation. I thought this was really, really interesting. Some of you may have come across this. Anybody here ever hear of a man named Sir Isaac Newton? A few of you have heard of Newton? He had a friend who, like himself, was a great scientist, but he was an infidel, while Newton was a devout believer in God and Christ. They often discussed their views concerning God as their mutual interest in science drew them much together. So they spent a lot of time together, Newton and his friend. Newton had a skillful mechanic, and this man made him a replica of our solar system in miniature. And he designed this so that all of the planets were there in their proper orbits around the sun, and if you turned a crank, each one would move around in their proper place. Now that in itself is phenomenal, isn't it? Can you imagine having one of these little things? I don't know how big it was. You know, say it was big enough to sit on a desk, and you turn a crank, and you can see the Earth in its orbit around the sun. And at the same time, you can see where all of the other planets in the solar system are moving. He had it set up one day, and he was sitting and reading in his study with this mechanism on a large table. So it was fairly, you know, maybe picture something about that big there. His scientist friend came in. Being a scientist, he recognized at a glance what was before him. Stepping up to it, he slowly turned the crank and with undisguised admiration watched the heavenly bodies all move in their relative speed in their orbits. Standing off a few feet, he exclaimed, "My, what an exquisite thing this is! Who made it?" Newton never even looked up from the book he was reading and said, "Nobody." And quickly turning to Newton, the man said, evidently you didn't understand my question. I asked you who made it." Looking up now, Newton solemnly assured him that nobody made it, that all the aggregation of matter so much admired had just happened to assume the form it was in. The astonished infidel replied with some heat, "You must think I'm a fool. Of course somebody made it, and he is a genius, and I'd like to know who he is." Laying his book aside, Newton arose and laid a hand on his friend's shoulder. "This thing is but a puny imitation of a much grander system whose laws you know, and I am not able to convince you that this mere toy is without a designer and maker. Yet you profess to believe that the great original from which the design is taken has come into being without either designer or maker. Now tell me, by what sort of reasoning do you reach such an incongruous conclusion?" The infidel was at once convinced and became a firm believer that Jehovah, he is the God. I thought that was an interesting story. Simple little mechanism, really, by today's standards. Maybe in the day and age of Newton, it was fairly complicated. But it clearly demonstrated the Creator. Clearly demonstrated to this non-believer that there had to be someone who designed all of this. And this person, Newton told him, you know the laws. You know the laws that are constantly at work in creation. I have to make a confession. When I was in high school, I took physics. We had physics for part of a semester and chemistry for the second half of the semester. My physics mark was about 30. And I think I had 30 because the teacher felt sorry for me. In the second half of the semester, I had in the 90s in the chemistry, and the teacher finally, I guess it was just driving him crazy. He called me up to the desk one day. He said, "What's going on here? Why is your mark from the first semester so low, and then all of a sudden it's so high?" And I said, I can't grasp all of this kind of stuff. Too many numbers and formulas and equations and all of that stuff. And I wish I would have paid more attention, because possibly I would have come across one of the laws that is at work in the universe. And it's the law of the conservation of angular momentum. Is that familiar to all of us? So I know the things that I'm talking about this evening are probably going to be very familiar to you, and I was nervous in presenting some of these things, because I know the raw intelligence that is represented here this evening, and I know that a lot of these things are just, you know, click like that. And I went into a bookstore today, and I looked up, I found a book on definition of scientific terms, and I thought, I'm going to get a bit of a better grasp of what this law is. A friend of mine told me about this law, and he explained it as best as he figured I could grasp it. Well, I looked it up in this dictionary of scientific terms, and it didn't register. It's a law. It's a law that's at work. It's an unchanging law in our universe. It's an important law. My understanding of it, and if I'm terribly wrong, correct me. If I'm just a little off, don't embarrass me, okay? If something is moving, okay, if something is moving, and it, say if it comes apart. Now, this isn't exactly how the whole law works, but this is a demonstration of what it does, okay? If something is moving, is going around, and it comes apart, the parts are going to continue to move in the same way that the original was moving. Does that make sense? Yes or no? If it doesn't, I can demonstrate it really quickly. Do we need a demonstration? There's a few puzzled faces. If I could get three people to just come up here for a second, please. It's just really simple. This is a very, very... you're not going to get hurt, I hope. This is a very childish demonstration of this law. If you could just stand fairly close together and start walking in a circle, okay? Okay, so you can see which way we're going, okay? A smaller circle. Smaller circle, okay. You can see which way they're going. Now, when they move apart from that circle, okay, they are going to, no, they're not, they're going to continue.
You're going this way. No, you're going to go, you're going to be going, okay, and you're going to be going the same way, okay? I guess.
The way this was described to me, that's what happens. That's a simple illustration of the law of the conservation of angular momentum. There is a galaxy in the universe that turns the opposite way of the other galaxies in the universe. Now, doesn't that impress you? According to science, if the original, whatever the universe started out, leaving God out of the picture, if it was there, and if the parts of it were moving, so if this was moving, when it banged, the Big Bang, when that happened, all of the parts that came out of that should have been moving in the same way. So universe, or this whatever it was turning like this. When the parts of it came out, they should all have been turning the same way. Therefore, all of the parts in the universe should be following this law that can't be changed, can't be broken. But there's this galaxy, and it's a... I have my friend, hopefully, racking his brain and looking through his notes, because I wanted to give you the NGC designation of that galaxy. I can't do that. If this friend of mine does come up with it again, I'll send you a fax or something so that you can bring it up. Well, how does that speak of Christ? What does that mean to us?
What it means to me is that Jesus says, I'm here. I am here. I am real. And I have thought of everything. I have thought of absolutely everything. And I have designed everything so that when you look at it, you are going to find clear evidence that points to me. I would love to be able to take a peek at this galaxy through a telescope, to be able to see that something that's out there in space that says, you cannot deny my presence. And that's Jesus. He has thought of everything. I would have never thought of anything like that, would you? To just throw a galaxy in, spin in a different way? Just to throw it in creation? Just to throw something here and something there and just set this in here and put that there and all of these things put together and you look, every place you look, he's thought of something to demonstrate his presence there. That thought to me is, in my mind I think, wow, I get really excited. We were at a men's breakfast and this friend started telling me about this. And there was about six or eight of us sitting around the breakfast table and, it's early in the morning, we're all kind of tired, and this guy comes out with his number and starts explaining all this stuff and everything. And wow, we were talking, we were all excited about it. And we looked at the other guys at the breakfast table and they're all sitting there, what are you guys talking about? Didn't mean anything to them. They didn't register, but boy, to me, it points to Jesus. And if anything, when we look at something, if it points to Jesus, shouldn't that get us excited? Shouldn't we be looking for those things so that we can see Jesus? So that we can see a little bit more of him? A little glimpse of him there. A little glimpse of the reality of him in creation around us. Something else that comes out of this, if he's thought of everything, when I get into a difficult situation and I rack my brain and try to think, how am I going to get out of this? How am I going to get through this? Guess what? He's thought of the way out, hasn't he? He's thought of the solution. He's provided the way. And my brain, when it stops to work, when I can't come up with a solution, he's already thought of it. Have you ever been in a difficult situation? Have you ever been in very trying circumstances? The next time you are, remember some of these things and remember that Jesus has thought of it already. He's been there. He's already done things to demonstrate that he knows. He knows. Another interesting thing that this friend of mine, I should have brought him along with me. He's a really, really, I won't say too much about him because his daughter's here, but him and I really get along because we get excited about the same things in creation. He just out of the blue told me the other night, if you take the diameter of a hailstone, take the square root of the diameter of a hailstone and multiply by 54, you can determine, that will give you the speed that hailstone fell. Square root of the diameter times 54 and it'll give you the speed. Isn't that something? I can just picture this fall now and some big billowing clouds come in. There's going to be a whole bunch of people outside with little calibrators there and picking up hailstones and measuring the diameter and trying to find the square root and multiplying by 54. And you're going to be all excited about that. Aren't you? You should be, because it demonstrates something about Jesus. And if our desire is to see Jesus, and if we realize that when we look at creation, we can see Jesus, then something like that should get us excited, shouldn't it? How many of you knew that? Nobody? You people need to get out more. Yeah. Something like that. Something like the law of the conservation of angular momentum. Those things tell me something else about Jesus. They tell me that he can be depended on. Because he doesn't change. He doesn't change. Hebrews 13:8 says, Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, forever. He's not going to change. We can depend on that. And he's given us little glimpses of that in the creation that he created around us. Little glimpses that he doesn't change. You can count on little calculations like that. Simple little calculation, and you can tell how fast the hailstone fell. Well, did that happen by accident? Do you think it's something that a scientist developed? They stumbled across a way to figure it out. But why is that possible? Because when Jesus created everything, he created these laws in our universe, and things move according to those laws. And we can depend. We depend on those things all the time, don't we? We don't even always think about it. We're driving down the road. We hit a bump. We don't think, why, I'm glad gravity is here to hold my vehicle down to the road. Because if there was a little bit less gravity and you hit that bump, you might go flying off into space or something, right? We don't think about that all the time, do we? There's so many things in creation that point to Jesus, and we walk over top of them, and we knock them down, and we push them out of the way, and we destroy them, we do all kinds of things to them, we take them so much for granted, and yet Jesus is demonstrating the reality of his presence in those things. And he's saying to us, you can count on me. I've given you these little pictures in creation to show you that you can count on me. Have you ever had a friend that you thought you could count on and they let you down? It's not an awful feeling. You really thought this person was going to come through for you and they let you down. Do you ever have a vehicle that let you down someplace? Can count on that, can't you? That's an awful feeling, isn't it? Down Kingsway, I think it is, and turning onto Barry Down, and just coming up there a little ways, and our van kind of went like that, and the check engine light come on. And our thought was not, this is such a dependable vehicle. Our thought was, it's going to let us down. We maybe won't make it to this conference. We're going to be stranded on Barry Down. It's not a nice feeling to be let down, is it? But Jesus Christ will never, ever, ever let us down. And we can count on that from now and right through till billions of years in eternity. He's not going to let us down. Isn't that exciting? Next time you go out and look in your vehicle and there's hailstone dents on it, just be reminded that Jesus Christ isn't going to ever let you down. No matter what happens. Last thing I'd like to discuss, and I know this is an area that's very, very close to the hearts of many people here. Spilocalcus merriae. One of your favorite insects, isn't it? It's called More commonly called the golden yellow chalcid. Wasp-like insects. They're found from New York, and kind of down along like this, and then kind of across the states like that through to California. They're a little wasp-like creature. Do you want me to repeat that Latin name for you? No? Okay. Where are we here? The female of this species uses its ovipositor. It's an egg-laying device. It's kind of like a pointy thing. It would look kind of like a stinger, but it's used for depositing eggs. And it uses these to deposit or to thrust one or two eggs into the skin of a half-grown caterpillar. Okay, picture this little caterpillar. They're parasites. This insect lays a couple eggs on it. the eggs hatch. Larvae come out. And they will eat the non-essential organs of this caterpillar. So the caterpillar stays alive and it'll pupate. And then these things will continue to munch away inside. And then they too will pupate and come out as little Spirochalus mariae. Okay? Hope I haven't lost anybody yet. Because an incredible thing happens. There is a process called hypermetamorphosis. Hypermetamorphosis. And those one or two eggs that are laid on that caterpillar can actually develop into a dozen larvae. One or two eggs, dozen larvae. That's like a chicken laying one egg, and from that one egg hatching out a whole brood of chicks. Isn't that incredible? One or two eggs, hypermetamorphosis, and somehow this egg here, instead of hatching one larva, it'll hatch 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 maybe. It's a type of, as a form of, a sexual reproduction. It's a kind of a variation on that. Well, you probably are wondering, what does this have to do with John chapter 12, verse 21, where these Greeks came and said, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus," or "we would see Jesus." Well, this is what I see in this. Jesus is incredibly creative, isn't he? Incredibly creative. I sit down and I open up my insect book, and I start reading through, and I just, man, there's so many things. He created these creatures this way, and these things do this, and these things do that. And it's just, it's incredible to read this stuff. Because it demonstrates over and over and over again the incredible creativity of Jesus. So when I think about that, I realize that the solutions that he provides to problems, trials, struggles that I face in my life are probably going to be creative solutions. Creative solutions. When Israel left Egypt and they messed things up and they spent some time wandering around in the wilderness and then they were finally to come in and take over the promised land, did God say to them, "Now you go in and you knock those walls down and you kill everybody"? He was creative, wasn't he? Let's see now. First day you're going to march around the city. Absolutely silent. The next day you're going to march around the city. The seventh day you're going to go around and around and around. And then you're going to blow your horns. And I'm going to give you the victory. Isn't that creative? They had a problem. They were to come in and they were to conquer this land. It was going to be their land. But God said, "I'm going to provide you a creative solution to this. I'm going to provide you a creative way to have victory in this." The next city they came to, the next cities on down through their history, God provided creative ways to give them victory. Sometimes their armies would go out and march and fight and they would win. One time King David said to God, "Am I going to go kind of right up here and go and attack them or what?" God said, "No, you just hang on. When you hear a sound in the wind or whatever, the sound in the mulberry trees, then you go for it." Isn't that something? So when I've got a problem in my life, when I've got a crisis in my life, I can depend on Jesus Christ to provide a creative solution to that. He's going to provide creative victories. He's going to look after me in creative ways. You go back again into the wilderness. The children of Israel, they're wandering around there. They're hungry. They start to complain. What did God do? He had this little stuff appear on the ground in the morning. Would we have thought of that? Would that have been our solution to that problem? What about when the disciples say, "Hey, Jesus, there's thousands of people here, and the day is getting late, and we're all getting hungry"? Their creative solution was, "Send them away. Send them off to Garson and Walden and all of these other places so they can go and buy food. Send them away." And what did Jesus say? "You feed them." And then he took this little boy's lunch. He says, I'm going to demonstrate a creative solution to this problem. We'll take this little lunch, and I'll pray, I'll give thanks, I'm going to start dividing it up for everybody. And thousands of people were fed from that one little boy's lunch. Our solutions to things come up so pitiful compared to the solutions that God provides. So when I look at creation around me, when I look at all of these things, I see Jesus. I see that He can be depended on. I see the absolute reality of His presence there. I see His creativity. And I see that I, as one of His followers, as one of His children, so often try to take Him and put Him in my mold of Him. I have an idea of what Jesus is. I have an idea of what He's like, of how He is going to act or react in situations and circumstances in my life. It's like taking Jell-O and you put it in that little mold and it comes out this way, and that's the way it is. But when I look at creation around me, and when I have that desire in my life to see Jesus, I find that He's not what this mold is like that I've been trying to put Him in. And it's wrong for us to try to do that with Jesus Christ. To try to fit Him into our little concept of who He is. He is so much greater, so much more awesome than we understand, than we appreciate. And to top it all off, we are His special creation. You and I are His special creation. We would see Jesus. And we see Him magnified and glorified in His creation. Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, I thank You so much for Your Son, Jesus Christ. I thank You that He is such a wonderful, such an awesome God. I thank You that when we stop and we look at creation around us and we look into the workings of it, even just a little, we are overwhelmed by the reality of Jesus, by the creativity of Jesus. We are overwhelmed by Him. I thank You for that this evening. I thank You that we can spend this time together this weekend, and I pray that You would help each one of us to be challenged in our desire to see Jesus. In His name, amen.